The New York Times Magazine looked at Kensington, a neighborhood in northeast Philadelphia, for an October 10th feature. As Jordan Holycross noted for Fair.org, they didn't see a diverse and resilient community fighting tirelessly against adversity, but instead a chance to take readers on a sensational 6,000-word tour of trauma, complete with cringeworthy language and compassionless photographs. Reporter Jennifer Percy began by painting a dismal and menacing backdrop. Quote, the streetlights were broken or dim, and the alleyways were dark. Most of the blocks were lined with two-story row houses, abandoned factories, and vacant lots. Kensington Avenue, the neighborhood's main drag, was a congested mess of Chinese takeouts, pawn shops, check-cashing joints, and Irish pubs. Close quote. How many urban neighborhoods have brightly lit alleys? Was there any other way to describe a mix of businesses catering to working-class customers associated with diverse ethnicities other than a congested mess? This framing continued throughout the feature. At one point, Holycross writes, Percy described the Kensington underpass as dark, like the opening to a rat hole. As if all underpasses aren't dark. Anyone who gets off the train in Kensington is reduced to a buyer, as in, quote, the train doors opened and buyers spilled onto the walkway, close quote. Because Percy can't imagine why anyone would go to Kensington other than to buy drugs. The Times doesn't shy away from stigmatizing people who do use drugs. Percy writes artlessly of one individual, quote, his eyes looked as if someone had scooped them out and filled them with mud, close quote. The piece reserved the word residents for those who lawfully live in Kensington's houses and apartments. Anyone else, regardless of how long they've lived in Kensington, was just another homeless addict. Holycross points to the current AP style guide, which urges reporters to use person-first language when covering the drug issue, replacing the noun addict with phrasing like he was addicted, or people with heroin addiction, or he used drugs. But in every possible instance, the Times describes these people as addicts or users. Alex Sheriffs, a Philadelphia resident who's witnessed the effects of stigmatizing language through her work, reached out to the paper about their language use, asking in a tweet if they would consider person-first language to talk about addiction. Philip Corbett, the Times associate managing editor for Standards, responded, quote, we do recognize the sensitivity of this topic and understand the arguments about words like addict and alcoholic. At the same time, as with many issues of language and terminology, we try to weigh the pros and cons of terminology favored by experts against the widely used and accepted layperson's language. At this point, addict remains widely used among ordinary readers, and even some people who have addictions continue to use the term. On the other hand, I think that, for now at least, a person with a heroin addiction, and similar phrases, would strike many readers as unfamiliar and strained, close quote. It's not clear why the Times thinks readers would be puzzled by a phrase like a person with a heroin addiction, especially knowing that research shows that describing people solely as addicts generates implicit and explicit bias against them, while person-first language helps eliminate it. Brooke Feldman, a community activist who was interviewed for and quoted in the Times article, told Holycross she was surprised and upset after reading the piece. She said her interview with Percy included a productive conversation about not sensationalizing the situation in Kensington, but that the final product did just that. Feldman was also disappointed that the many practical solutions being built by Kensington's grassroots organizations were absent. After reading the piece, one would be forgiven for assuming that city officials had taken the lead in providing resources for Kensington's struggling populations. Government officials are described as being the people on the ground trying to get people into treatment or provide access to services. The Times completely ignored the many non-governmental organizations that have been doing this work every day for years, well before the city declared Kensington a disaster area. For instance, the group Prevention Point was mentioned once, described simply as a nonprofit on Kensington Avenue that exchanged dirty needles for clean ones. Prevention Point has also helped get hundreds of people into treatment in the past year, Holy Cross writes, runs a homeless shelter, provides case management and help with legal services, teaches individuals and groups how to administer Narcan, and gives those who use drugs a safe place to exist. It's been instrumental in helping to guide the city's efforts and making sure that people stay alive long enough to get treatment. The Times framing propped up the city's official narrative while ignoring the hard work of advocates and of residents. Feldman is concerned that the Times piece will only add to the stigma that much of corporate media has already generated. Sensational stories cause harm and add to stigma, which is the number one barrier to people opening up and being willing to receive services, she said. For those most impacted, dehumanizing reporting can be deadly. Jair Bolsonaro, the new president of Brazil, has promised to unleash a wave of violence on the working class, minorities, and the left. An army officer during Brazil's fascist military dictatorship, about which he maintains that its only error was not killing enough people, Bolsonaro told his supporters to shoot every Workers' Party supporter in Acre State in September. As Alan McLeod notes for Fair.org, at a presidential rally, Bolsonaro declared, quote, "These red outlaws will be banished from our homeland. It will be a cleanup the likes of which has never been seen in Brazilian history. Either they go overseas or they go to jail," close quote. Bolsonaro has declared himself in favor of torture and dictatorship and carte blanche for police killing. He told a Congress member he wouldn't rape her because she didn't deserve it, and said that gay children should be beaten. During the 2016 impeachment of Workers' Party President Dilma Rousseff, who was tortured by the dictatorship, Bolsonaro dedicated his impeachment vote to the colonel who tortured her. Bolsonaro's economic plans include cuts to pensions, a fire sale of state assets, and opening up the country's vast natural resources for foreign exploitation. The view of U.S. financial markets and their uncritical mouthpiece, the financial press, McLeod reports, has been clear. Before the election, the Financial Times and CNBC both reported that the markets were cheering Bolsonaro's lead in the presidential race, with a follow-up Financial Times piece noting weapons companies surging stocks under his emergence as the frontrunner, a trend mirrored by stocks more generally as his performance, quote, heartened investors, close quote. Brazil's markets have surged on hope of Bolsonaro victory. Can he deliver? Ran a New York Times headline, by which it meant deliver on promises to gut Social Security. The CBC explored the new world of possibilities for profits for Canadian corporations in agriculture, extractive sectors, and finance, as Bolsonaro promises to slash environmental regulations and virtually all market restrictions. It could be a good time to be a mining investor in Brazil, the CBC reported. The Wall Street Journal went the furthest. Its editorial board endorsed Bolsonaro as a credible reformer, describing him as an antidote to the greed of opponent Fernando Haddad's Workers' Party. It also made the claim that the election was, quote, transparent, competitive, and fair, close quote. Truly remarkable, considering Bolsonaro is widely accused of illegally employing foreign companies to create a massive fake news industry via WhatsApp, and that former leftist president Lula da Silva, by far the most popular candidate, had been jailed on questionable charges and barred from running. So what can you say? Faced with the choice of center-left reformers who might tax business slightly more and outright fascists, the financial press showed who they serve and who they are. They're not interested in the human cost of Bolsonaro's near-genocidal statements, the cost to the population if pensions are gutted and state assets sold off, the cost to the Amazon, a crucial carbon reserve that has to be maintained and strengthened if humanity has any chance of mitigating the catastrophe of climate change. These, we conclude, are mere externalities. When it comes to opportunities for profit, nothing else matters. Readers and viewers, take note. You're listening to Counterspin, brought to you each week by the Media Watch Group Fair.